The Guardian. Football Weekly.
Football Weekly Extra. Today, Man United from 2-0 down to 3-2 winners at Blackpool. Is it a turning point in the title race, we ask? Meantime, Wayne Rooney, like Richard Keys, caught out by tendency to smash at misses. We round up all the midweek action in League and League Cup, where Birmingham saved David Sullivan another unnecessary car trip by booking their place at Wembley final with Arsenal. A top Brummy fan gives us his reaction. There's European thrills and spills. Sid on Adebayor's move to Madrid. The latest from Italy too. Plus, we look forward to the weekend's FA Cup games, the Red Devils versus the Saints, and will Man City prove ropey in tie with Notts County? All of that and much more in today's Football Weekly Extra. Yes, much banter in store today then, with Paul Doyle.
Hello.
Tom Lutz.
Hello.
And Simon Burton.
Yes, hello.
Yes, hello to you, Simon. Tom, let's just come back to your hello, because it's been ever so long since we had you. Have you been in since the World Cup, or am I getting old?
I think it was the World Cup, then they just said no more.
No more.
Into banishment.
Yeah, you're not the only person, actually, who got dropped from the roster. Because a lot of people are saying, where's Amy Lawrence?
We've just been hanging around together.
Have you?
Yeah.
You and Amy? Because
yeah.
She's been off on maternity leave,
yes.
Hasn't she?
Yeah. It's not my baby, by the way.
Baby doing well?
I think so.
Amy doing well?
I think so.
There we go. Put a lot of listeners' minds at rest then. Now, I mentioned Man United. Yet another comeback. 2-0 down. 3 goals in the last 20 minutes. Sees them maintain their unbeaten record and stay, was it? 5 points clear at the top of the table. Yikes. So many things to talk about here. Paul, is it a turning point?
I don't think it's a turning point in the title race. I think it could have been a turning point, because had Blackpool prevailed and held on to their lead, it might have encouraged other teams to adopt a similar approach and attack United, because too many teams, in my opinion, particularly at Old Trafford, go there very inhibited by the aura of United. However, the reason I don't think it's a turning point and you know, guarantees the title for United is because they still have to play Arsenal at the Emirates and Chelsea
at
twice.
Stamford Bridge. And Liverpool at Anfield. And they've got the derby with Man City as well.
Yeah. So
all in the next 6 Premier League games, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Woof.
What it does mean, of course, is that possibly they can, you know, go to the Emirates and Stamford Bridge and play for a draw, which they're quite adept at doing.
Mm. Blackpool completely bossed the game in the first half. We're 2-0 up. And should they not have had a penalty then?
I think they should definitely have had a penalty, yeah. And that would have put them 3-0 up.
Even still,
you can never write off United. And their comeback was a tribute to the incredible winning mentality that Ferguson has instilled on them, in them over many, many years. And it's something that other teams lack.
Ian Holloway described the lack of the penalty as a bit of a turning point in the game. Many other commentators have pointed to the withdrawal of the pretty abject Wayne Rooney in that match and the arrival of Chicharito.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in that sense, it may have been a turning point in terms of the attitude towards Wayne Rooney, whose starting place must be in doubt now, because Hernandez impresses every time he plays, whereas Rooney certainly doesn't. And that fat contract that he was awarded, and that was, for some reason, was presented as a great victory by Alex Ferguson in persuading him to accept this huge pay increase despite playing like a pudding for months, is beginning to look an unwise choice.
It was a good game for Berbatov as well, because I think people have said, well, he only scores against in easy victories against teams like Birmingham, where they're winning 5-0 anyway. But this was a game where he scored and it changed the game, and it won them 3 points rather than just sealing 3 points. So it's a really good game for him as well, I think.
Blackpool have obviously won some surprising games this season, but they don't just kind of win in an exciting and brilliant way. They also lose in an exciting and brilliant way. They're basically a good team to have around and for dramatic reasons.
Hmm.
But I don't care if Manchester United win the league or don't, but I'm kind of keen for them to lose at some point. If it were Blackpool doing the beating, then that would be lovely, again, for dramatic reasons. But I just think it's a poor season. I don't think this is a particularly strong Manchester United team. And for this to be the one Alex Ferguson team that goes through a season unbeaten. Just seems perverse to me.
Just a quick word on Blackpool. Charlie Adam Key again, putting in the two corners that led to Blackpool's goals. And then Sir Alex Ferguson saying afterwards, his corner kicks alone are worth £10 million. £12 million is the price tag that Ian Holloway has slapped on him. Today, the revelation that said Ian Holloway will get a cut of any fee for Charlie Adam. Ian Holloway says it's nothing unusual about this, but I was a bit surprised about that. Is that normal behaviour?
Well, I don't think it's unique for managers, particularly in the lower divisions, to have that kind of clause. But it's unusual for, firstly, a manager to then find themselves in the top flight and be discussing a £12 million transfer where they would be getting a cut of it.
We don't know what the cut is either. He's saying it's not 20, 30%, but even if it's 1%, that's still a lot of money.
Of £12 million, yeah.
He is right, though, that Charlie Adam is worth much more than £4 million, anyway. But on another note, that sort of thing is quite common with European coaches in Africa. It's not enshrined in their contract, but it's something that they tend to negotiate with players themselves, some say, as a condition for letting them play in the national team, that, you know, to say, I'll pick you if you let me be your agent. And by picking them in the national team, it also inflates their value and increases their chances of getting...
Basically.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, it's never been proven, but a lot of European coaches, and not only European coaches, some African coaches I can think of, and Emmanuel Adebayor could tell you of one in particular that he feels victimised him in that way. But it's never been proven, but accusations are often made.
Yeah, we were talking before about Vanderlei Luxemburgo, who was for a while the manager of Brazil, and there were allegations there as well. I think there was even a suggestion of jail time. But anyway, allegedly... on all of that, that he would pick players for the Brazilian national team, their value would thus expand exponentially, and he would get a cut from their club.
Shady business.
Shady business, yeah. Aston Villa, what are we? They've had, eh? This time 7 days ago, or maybe eight by now, they were just goal difference away from the bottom three. Now they're only 2 points off the Europa League place, but that Europa League place, seventh in the table, now occupied by Liverpool, second straight win under Dalglish. Less impressive this time around?
Certainly less impressive goals. There was no Morelos wonder strike this time, as there have been in their last couple of wins, or last couple of games. They were very lucky in the way the goal was scored. If Pansel had any form of left foot worth kind of attaching to the end of that leg, he'd have cleared the ball and there'd have been no goal there.
Right. Fulham let down by blunt pencil.
Something like that, yeah.
Right, OK. Liverpool led through pencil.
Yeah,
that would work as well. Okay. Yeah. Well, I'll move on. Bolton, Chelsea, Paul Doyle. Are the Blues back in business?
They're getting there. They're not quite back to the form they were in at the very start of the season, but there are signs of that the likes of Essien and Drogba certainly are regaining their fitness, and that is obviously a huge factor in their improvement. Which is why, as I suggested earlier, I think by the time Manchester United come to play them, it will be a serious clash.
Ah, that's interesting. Drogba looking very impressive, that goal, and that's their first away win in almost 3 months. Interesting.
One thing was Ramirez starting to look like a valuable signing. He I saw him against Blackburn a couple of weeks ago, and I thought he was their best player, much to my surprise, because I hadn't seen Chelsea in a few weeks, and I'd been led to believe he was a colossal waste of money. But he was really dynamic in midfield, and dynamism in midfield is something they've lacked a lot this season.
Mm.
And against Bolton, he was, again, in similar form and got his first goal.
All right. Chelsea are away to Everton at the weekend in the FA Cup. We'll be talking more about that later on. Interesting transfer business going on, though, at Stamford Bridge. Gael Kakuzu has been loaned out to Fulham. So they'll have a bit of gale force in midfield, the Cottagers. That's nice for them. Loan till the end of the season. Presumably Chelsea were kind of clearing the way for the anticipated arrival of one or two big names in the side, but that hasn't actually happened yet.
Well, possibly, although Kakuta, I think he's had one start this season.
Right.
He's not making a major first-team impact. If he can go out on loan and get some experience elsewhere, even if there isn't necessarily a high-profile replacement, I can see how that makes... That makes sense for Chelsea. I think Kakuta will always have the storm created by the manner of his arrival, the way he was kind of stolen away from France, hanging over him. And I think that He needs to justify his place in the Premier League.
In fairness, the storm wasn't only created by the controversial manner of his arrival. He was brilliant at youth level. Whenever you saw him, he looked like definitely he was going to be a star. He's so tricky, so talented. But he's at that age in particular, players need to play. Are their skills sort of erodes?
How old is he now?
He's in his late teens. I don't know exactly.
Okay.
I can't remember. But he needs to play.
It's an underwhelming transfer market so far for Chelsea, isn't it? Because we saw Stephen Pienaar elect to go to White Hart Lane instead of Stamford Bridge. And the anticipated move... Well, we'll talk with Sid in a bit about this story about Aguero. But David Luiz, who everyone thought was signed, sealed and delivered, now there's been some hitches.
The recession is still hitting football, it would seem. Loads of teams have been linked with big money deals, but can't bring themselves to actually fork out the sums that are being demanded. You know, Chelsea, Liverpool, Birmingham, they're all being linked with these, but the deals aren't getting done.
Simon, you did the rumour mill, or what would have been the rumour mill, but you had problems with the letter U on your keyboard.
Yeah, it's true. It was a difficult time.
Right. What did you have in your rumour mill?
Well, about David Luiz, the consensus seemed to be that the two sides aren't very far apart. And I mean, reading between the lines, we'd be surprised if a deal wasn't done.
Surprised?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What most papers seem to be saying, and there was not everyone was reporting quite the same story, was that Chelsea were happy to give 20 million of a 25 million euro total transfer fee now, and Benfica wanted all. But in the meantime, Chelsea agreed personal terms to the player and secured a work permit. So that really, it's a small difference, and once that is ironed out, everything else is in place.
Of course, the big rumours, the big transfers, everyone's really excited about. Who's going to take over from Kesey and Grazy at Sky Sports? But, you know, we'll have to see.
Do you have any thoughts on that, James?
Do I have any thoughts on that?
Who should take over?
My sincere thought is that whoever takes over from Richard Keys will have a tough job. It's a big pair of shoes to fill.
He's very good, wasn't he?
I think his presentation style isn't to everybody's taste. You might have issues personality-wise, but in terms of being a presenter, the skills of being a presenter, the skill set, I think he's absolutely top-notch. And I think that people... I'm sure that Sky Sports are aware of this, although they didn't seem to have been too bothered about letting him go, given the way that they dropped him and Gray like hot potatoes. But beyond the issues of what he said and the way that he and Gray are alleged to have behaved in the last 15 years, I think that he was an unbelievably solid presenter for them. And... He will be a difficult man to replace.
And there's rumours Gary Neville might be coming in to
replace. Yeah, I can't see how that would possibly work, given Gary Neville's total unwillingness to hide his hatred of large areas of Sky's audience.
As soon as he says anything about Liverpool, you know, he's going to get...
There's no way they could appoint Gary
Neville. I don't think that the story is that Gary Neville is going to be replacing Andy Gray as the kind of main pundit, just that he would be joining the panel and sitting next to Jamie Redknapp and at quite a few games.
It's not like they're just going to parachute someone in to replace Andy Gray straight away. I think what they'll do is they'll have a selection of pundits, and over time one of them will become the new Andy Gray, if that's something you want to become. That's arguable whether that's something you want to come, but I think that's probably how they'll do it. They'll seed people in.
Of all the players in the Premier League over the last 10 years, Gary Neville's is perhaps most compromised when it comes to neutrality.
No one here is better qualified to assess presenters than you. Who are the other presenters that you admire?
I think Rebecca Lowe's really good. I think Gary Lineker's very good. I think that the problems that people have sometimes with Gary and the tone of Match of the Day are largely due to the fact that he's always with the same group of people. And if you were to, say, mix it up, I think, again, in terms of the skill set of being a presenter, I think he does a really good job.
I think Gary Lineker is wasted as a presenter. Mm. You're talking to a guy, you know, Golden Boot winner at the World Cup. Yeah. He should be a pundit. He should be telling you about football rather than asking other people about their opinion. If he has expertise
else in as a presenter,
football,
that could work.
Well,
I
reviewed his World Cup book, which was rubbish for The Observer a few months ago. But when he actually talked about football and the technical aspects of it, he actually sounded far more knowledgeable than he does when he's a presenter and he just does the golf club jokes.
Yeah. That's the advantage that former professional footballers have over, you know, broadcasters or journalists, is that they've played the game and so they can bring expertise and experience that we can't possibly have.
Mm.
But he's not called upon to use that. He just gurns at the camera and asks former defenders about how to be a good striker, which is ridiculous.
Yeah, it's a fair point, Paul. Now, very, very shortly, we'll be dialing up Sid Lowe and thrilling to the exciting conquest of a place in the Wembley Carling Cup final by Birmingham. Now, Carling Cup, everybody. We know the finalists now. Arsenal beat Ipswich. AOB posting that the Ipswich fans were singing Swing Low Sweet Chariot. Lovely touch, that one. But Arsenal beat them, and Arsenal goes through to the final, where they will be meeting Birmingham, who came from 3-1 down on aggregate and in a thrilling match on Wednesday night to put West Ham out. Tom Lutz, Birmingham fan, take us through your emotions.
Well, I was in a pub full of West Ham fans, so I kind of internalised my happiness and just sat there with a beatific grin. But the one thing that stood out for me was the atmosphere at St Andrews last night. It was superb, which has just been missing for the last year or so, maybe. And it was probably the best atmosphere I've heard there since the infamous Villa-Birmingham derby back in 2002, when Enkelman was basically so scared of the crowd that he let that throw-in roll in. And I think that really contributed to the victory. The other thing was that Birmingham actually had to chase a game instead of just sitting there and trying to grind out a result. And as soon as they had to do that, all of a sudden they were actually quite an exciting side, which most people don't realise that they can be.
Yeah. Craig Gardner with the winner, and he was saying afterwards that he'd said to his mates, because, you know, he's a born and bred Birmingham, no? And that he wanted to score the winner to get them to Wembley, and he did.
Yeah, and I don't think there's a better player kind of 20, 25 yards out in the Premier League than Gardner. Just he hits shots so cleanly and very low, which is quite often harder for the keeper to save. You'll very rarely see him shank a shot. And the amount of goals he scored like that this season is quite high. He was superb last night.
Can a Championship side play in Europe?
I see where you're going now. did Millwall play?
Because Paul over here assures me that Birmingham are going down.
I wouldn't be surprised if he went down, but I'd be a lot happier if he went down now than I was a week ago.
All right.
If they go down and get to the cup final,
what's this
Alex McLeish can claim to be the new Avram Grant.
Yeah, exactly.
but they are entitled to a place, because Arsenal will have a Champions League place, assuredly, though, and therefore the UEFA Cup spot will go, sorry, Europa League spot will go to Birmingham. I think I'm right in saying.
I think they have to win it.
Really?
To go. I don't think runners-up qualifies them for it.
Okay.
I think it goes to the place in the league, but we'll have to check that.
All right. Okay, you mentioned the atmosphere at St Andrews. There was a bit of trouble there, wasn't there?
Yeah, well, actually, interestingly, the last League Cup final at St Andrews, I went to, with some of my friends, a man offered to bite my nose off.
Ah.
And he was a Birmingham fan.
Was it a service or what?
We tried to get in the same taxi as him and his friends. Well, no, I'd backed off. My mate tried to get in the taxi. One of the guys started hitting my mate. The other one came over and said, I'm going to bite your effing nose off.
Right.
And I just thought that's the scariest thing anybody's ever said to me in my life.
Right.
So I just said, I don't want any trouble. And incredibly, he just
stopped.
But
I'd like to keep my nose. Really?
He just stopped and turned around and started hitting my mate instead. So we went to the game. My friend just bled for the entire... actually, might have gone to extra time, actually. I can't remember. But we won 4-1 anyway. But my mate's nose has never been the same since.
That's terrible, Tom.
This is the kind of, you know, that's the kind of fans you sometimes get at Birmingham, though.
It
hasn't got the nicest fans in the world.
Hannibal Lecter.
Yeah, who knew he was a Blues fan?
Yeah. Good. Well, anyway, congratulations, Tom. Will you be going to Wembley?
I've been
or
trying to get
in a pub full of West Ham fans.
No, I will be going.
All right. Good one.
Can we just say that as well as believing that Birmingham will go down, I think West Ham underlined last night that they will go down.
All right.
They capitulated so badly.
Do you still think Birmingham will go down, Paul?
Yes. A few weeks ago, by the way, Birmingham's board suggested they were going to bring in the reinforcements that they badly need. And, of course, the money has failed to materialise, unsurprisingly. So yes, I do think they're doomed. And I think West Ham and Wigan will join them.
Mm. All right. Then.
Just going back to that West Ham point, Birmingham scored in extra time, and West Ham had 25 minutes to score, and they'd basically win the game if they scored, and they didn't really produce anything, which was kind of a damning indictment of them and how they play under Grant as well.
Well, also how stupid it is to get yourself sent off in the manner that Piquion and Obinna did. They would have been quite useful last night had they not got themselves suspended.
Very good point. Time now to move on to all things European. Is that Sid Lowe in Spain?
Hello, James. Yes, it's me. How are you?
I'm ever so well. And yourself?
Yeah, not too bad, thank you.
Great. Hey, we're heading into the last week of the transfer market, and that means there's plenty of Spain-related stories on the go, not least of which is that rather surprising loan deal for Adebayor to Real Madrid.
Yeah, I wouldn't go so far as to say it was surprising, to be honest.
Would you not?
I mean, we talked about this a bit the other day, and I said that Adebayor was possible that he would become an option again. As soon as the Ruud van Nistelrooy deal collapsed finally, because Hamburg basically said to Real Madrid, you're being far too cheeky and there's no way we're letting you get away with this, then Adebayor became an option again. Obviously, the question mark was putting together a deal that both clubs were happy with, but even that wasn't that hard, because Real Madrid want a six-month player. Man City wanted someone to take their wages off them. I don't really see a place for Adebayor, so in that sense, everybody's happy. The one sort of slight sticking point was the question mark of the buyout clause. Now, more to the point, the purchase clause at the end of it. But, of course, what Real Madrid have insisted on doing is making absolutely sure that purchase clause has no obligations attached to it at all, because the truth is, the way things stand right now, they've got no intention whatsoever of keeping him beyond the end of the season.
Oh, how interesting. And how motivating for him. I did think you were talking about Adebayor in relation to Malaga, actually, but obviously my mistake.
No, that's true. That was 2 or 3 weeks ago. That was a very, very... That actually it didn't happen, obviously, because he didn't sign for them. Yeah. Well, I mean, his negotiations were there. Malaga were very, very confident. Yeah. And in fact, the interest from Real Madrid was one of the reasons why Adebayor, I think probably held back, because frankly, if you're offered the choice between Malaga or Real Madrid, where would you go?
What are the Spanish press making? Are they excited about this? Do they see this as a big coup for Madrid and for Mourinho?
In a way, you've just hit the nail on the head. In a way, the most interesting thing about this is what they see this deal as representing, what they see it as meaning in terms of relationship between Mourinho and the club, in terms of where it means that the balance of power lies between Mourinho and Jorge Valdano, in particular the club's general director, a little bit more than the signing in itself. And of course, they've talked about Adebayor, what kind of player he is, where he can fit in, how good he is, whether they should be nervous about him, because the impression they've got, and I suppose it's not necessarily a bad impression, is that Adebayor is a bit dangerous, can be problematic in a dressing room. But as I say, the focal point really has been, okay, this means at least for the time being that one of the battles has been won and won by Mourinho, which isn't necessarily to say that he'll win the long-term war against certain members of the club.
Is it true that he banned Valdano from the training ground?
What's most amazing about this, well, not just the training ground, Valdano didn't travel with the team to Seville last night. He travelled on a private plane with the president. That seemed very much as a victory for Jose Mourinho, although I wonder whether that's so much of a victory, because what Mourinho has done is said, well, don't travel with the team, I don't want you anywhere near me. But what he's done is force Valdano into travelling with the president, where, of course, he can continue to plot against him if Mourinho's concerns are indeed true. I think one of the things that's so interesting about that is that Valdano was asked about it, and he didn't deny it. He didn't try and fudge it. He just said, well, if Mourinho feels a little bit more comfortable with a bit of distance between us, and if he feels more comfortable going directly to the president to negotiate things, then fine. And I think what that does as well is it lifts the lid on the other thing in all of this, which is during these transfer negotiations and during the talk about the squad and the confection of the squad and the bringing of players, Mourinho has had no interest whatsoever in talking to Valdano. And bear something in mind in all this, Valdano, at least in theory, is Mourinho's boss.
Hi, Sid. It's Tom here. It doesn't sound like Adebayor, they're that keen on making him a long-term signing. Is there any kind of bigger target they might go for in the summer then?
Well, this is interesting as well, and I suppose Adebayor will be clinging to the hope that maybe he comes to Madrid and maybe he scores 15 or 20 goals, and then Real Madrid would be persuaded that perhaps it is worth keeping him. And one of the reasons for that is that the obvious target for Real Madrid is Fernando Llorente, the Athletic Bilbao striker. There was an awful lot of talk not so long ago that a deal with Real Madrid and Athletic Bilbao was more or less in place. But the Bilbao president, who actually has to undergo presidential elections in the summer, and of course what that means is big warning sign, man might be lying, he says that as long as he's president, no one will sign Fernando Llorente from Athletic Bilbao, which of course means that Real Madrid would have to buy him via the buyout clause, and via the buyout clause with a hostile bid. In other words, not just the buyout clause, but paying the tax on top of it, meaning that he would cost somewhere in the region, if my maths don't fail me, of around about 60 million euros.
Wow. Also on the transfer front, Sid, James Heal says, what's going on with the whole Chelsea £52 million bid for Aguero and Godin? Did it happen or didn't it? Also, a supplementary question from podcaster, who is Godin?
Well, we're waiting for him, aren't we?
Yeah.
Well, James, did you see the story in the Guardian this week about the bid for Aguero?
Patently not.
No, well, good. That's because there wasn't one, and there's a reason. And there's a reason why you played right into my hands there. Thank you. The reason there wasn't a story in The Guardian was because we decided that there wasn't a story to write. I believe, and certainly the evidence in terms of the public reaction from Real Madrid, which is to say there was no bid from us for Aguero, because this quote came from Miguel Ángel Gil Marín, the effectively the owner of Atletico Madrid. He said, Real Madrid and Chelsea have made bids for Aguero. Madrid have denied it publicly. Chelsea have denied it privately. And frankly, I think what we've got here is a case of a director stroke owner of a club who's trying to prove to the fans that he can withstand bids, who's trying to stand up and basically say, look how strong I am, look how good I'm, you know, how good a job I'm doing, look how much I'm defending the interests of the club. And frankly, I think he's lying.
Mm. If they just sign Aguero and leave Godin behind, you could have a headline like Aguero, Wrath of Godin.
Very good.
Yeah. Romance of the Cup time, Sid.
It's what always romance?
Lovely. Yeah, it's always lovely to see unfancied sides getting a rare chance at glory in cup competitions, you know, Milkman, that kind of thing. Tell us about the teams now heading for the Copa del Rey final. Was it postmen? Is it, Sid? What?
Yeah, there's a couple of postmen. I think there's an electrician. There's a guy who goes to the football stadium in the morning after his long shift at the steel mill. It's Real Madrid and Barcelona.
Right. Even
in
your
suit. I think it's a real pity. I think, even in your suit, that's the Spanish phrase, hasta en la sopa. The fear from my point of view, I think my head may well explode, is that they play each other in the Copa del Rey on the 17th of April. They play each other in La Liga on the 20th of April. This, I say they play each other in the Copa del Rey if they both get to the final, which now looks even more likely than it did before. And not only that, that guarantees that they will play a two-legged Super Cup at the start of next season. And, of course, should they face each other in the Champions League quarterfinal, which is perfectly plausible, we could be having four Clásicos in 16 days. I don't think I can take it. I also think there's a much more serious issue, much more serious than my mental health, which is what this means for the rest of Spanish football. And I'm really struck by, I think, a very sad comment from the Deportivo La Coruña manager when he was talking about his second leg against Almeria. And he said, well, I'm going to rest players. Of course I am, because I'm not stupid. And the point he was making was, we could well come back and beat Almeria, but we then face Barcelona. And even if we beat them, we then face Real Madrid. What is the point? And of course, in sport, if you get to the stage where teams are thinking, what is the point? Well, then what is the point?
Yeah. Where are you, Sid?
I'm at Barcelona's training ground.
Ah, how very interesting. What are you doing there?
I am waiting for Xavi Hernandez to turn up.
Are you?
And at the same time as I wait for him, this is the best bit. I'm standing in a corridor. Well, I'm not now, obviously, because I'm talking to you on the phone and I can't multitask. I'm standing in the corridor doing kick-ups with a Barcelona football.
Wow, get you. Are you hoping
I'm hoping they might sign me, James. Yeah. I think if I do enough fancy tricks down the corridors, they might go, God, that guy's good. I mean, he's old and he's fat and stuff.
Yeah.
But sign
the kid up. And Xavi Hernandez, Sid, what do you got in store with him? Bit of lunch?
No, but I'm hoping to be able to talk to him about the Arsenal game and stuff like that. Obviously, with any luck, James, all fantastically fascinating stuff that you will read in your super sore away The Guardian at some stage.
Oh, that's excellent. All right, well, listen, give him our regards, because we've always been big fans here. And thanks, Sid. Enjoy your brush with greatness. And
I think that's what Xavi is currently being told by Pep in the dressing room. He says, Before you enjoy your brush with greatness.
and we'll speak to you on Monday.
Fantastic. Speak to you then.
Have a nice one, Sid. Sid Lowe in Spain. Couple of posts here. Nolan Giles getting in touch from Australia. And David Wheater's chin on a similar theme, talking about Kevin Muscat's tackle in the A-League, which David Wheater's chin suggests is perhaps the worst tackle of all time. Have you seen it?
I've seen some of Kevin Muscat's work.
He's outdone himself.
It's been posted a few times in our weekly YouTube roundup, and it's
paint
horrific.
Us a picture, Tom.
It's a bit like someone offering to bite your nose off,
right?
But it actually happening.
It's like a flying scissor tackle.
I don't know how the guy...
It's an attack on basically, if the attacking player had a football for a knee, it would have been a really good...
Yeah.
Really good tackle. I mean, it had caught the ball with his studs, but it would have been a pretty good tackle.
He largely now has a football for it.
Well, it may well have ballooned a little bit since
I think I heard that he was out for 12 months or something horrible. I don't know if that's true, but he was severely injured by...
I think they're talking about an 8-match ban or something for Muscat. But
yeah, who seemed bewildered by his red card.
There was nothing... enjoyable about the offence, but that his reaction to the referee deciding that it was a foul when it was clearly one of the most hideous assaults ever seen on a football field was, I mean, astonishing and frankly pretty entertaining. Like, he had a proper go at that referee for sending him off.
Yeah.
But I mean, anyone who's watched him in at any stage of his career, kind of, I don't want to slander the man, but I think that there are lots of fans who have seen that video back here in England and thought, well, nothing new there.
Nothing new there. Asian Cup, the final, is coming up on Saturday. We've got a report on it on Monday. Japan, they're one of the finalists after Korea took them to penalties. They were 2-1 up, it going into the last minute of extra time, Japan, and Korea equalised and went absolutely bonkers and then completely screwed up the penalties. Did you see the penalties? Didn't score one. And in the final, they'll be taking on Australia, who narrowly squeaked past Uzbekistan 6-0 in their semi. Not that this isn't a tough tournament or anything, but anyway, we'll have a report, I believe, on Japan, Australia in the Asian Cup final and how the whole Qatar experience has gone in Monday's pod, I believe.
Is yeah. Kevin Muscat coming on as a guest pundit for Australia?
I don't know. Actually, it'd be an interesting.
He's
move.
Got some free time.
Yeah, he certainly has. Can't finish part two without a quick nod to our Italian cousins, Coppa Italia, going on there. It's been a big week for cups pretty much everywhere. Inter have gone through to the Coppa semi-finals. I think it's the eighth year in a row they beat. Who did they beat? They beat Napoli on penalties. Palermo beat Parma on penalties. Palermo will now play Milan. Milan actually were playing Sampdoria very early in the evening yesterday. It was a 5:30 kickoff in Italy. I have no idea why. If you know, listeners, do post the reason. I was curious about that. But what I was also curious about was seeing how Milan performed, because they had Van Bommel going straight into a very new-look midfield alongside another Dutch signing they've made called Urbi Emanuelsson, who did all right, and Thiago Silva, who they've moved up to be a kind of, you know, like Desailly was for Milan back in the 90s. And Pato played up front with Alexander Merkel, who's the kind of the hot young thing, and Robinho, so the front line, three fellas up front, average age of about 21, I think. Tom, you had a finger in the air.
Yeah, I mean, Desailly used the Coppa Italia as kind of to experiment with their teams. I mean, from what you said, it sounds like they just...
Well, Coppa Italia has not traditionally been a tournament that anybody cared in at all about. But this year, the big teams are coming up against each other. For example, Inter will be playing either Juventus or Roma in their semi-final. So at this point, it is becoming a lot bigger. I think possibly also because the longer Italian clubs struggle in Europe, and I say this obviously with Inter having been champions of Europe and the world last year, but the longer that in general Italian football struggles in Europe, maybe the greater the consequences, the significance rather, of the Coppa Italia. But yeah, it does seem to be having a bit of a resurgence. And going through to a straight knockout, one-legged affair does seem to have helped it as well. I did say on Monday that we'd pay tribute to Bologna, who are now, I think, 7 points off the drop. I mean, you mentioned Portsmouth before, we did on Monday, but Bologna have been in an extraordinary situation this season. They haven't been paid, or they have now been paid, but they went through a period where they hadn't been paid since June until last January. They're on their second manager of the season. They're on their third president in a month. They've had points deducted from them twice over financial irregularities. And yet they're doing ever so well. They beat Lazio, one of the title contenders, on the weekend. I was going to... Marco De Vau. Do you remember Marco De Vau?
Yeah.
Yeah. He's been brilliant for them. It's interesting, actually, how clubs... And this is not the first time in Italy, because I remember Lazio, a very similar situation, when they went sort of 4 or 5 months without getting paid under Roberto Mancini, and at the same time were challenging for a place in Europe. They actually got a place in what was the old UEFA Cup. And it did seem... And in fact, De Vau was saying it this week, that when they actually took the club, when they started legal proceedings to release themselves from their contracts, and in January, in fact, there was the real prospect of people like De Vau, like Viviano, the Italian who's played for Italy in goal, suddenly being available on a free, that it seemed to, rather than make the players think, oh, what's the point, they all seem to have been unified and bonded together.
Also, if they're not getting paid, they're playing for new...
Often seems to work here as well, that when a club's in financial difficulties and can't pay the players, it does foster a sense of unity among the players. In fact, if you look at Mourinho, say, it seems to be a deliberate managerial tactic of his to kind of create among players a feeling that the world is against them. And if the world is actually against, I mean, if things are genuinely conspiring against a squad, then, I mean, it can have much the same effect as Mourinho tries to create artificially.
Mm. De Vau, though, quick word on it, was slightly checkered career he's had. He wasn't very successful in his biggest appointment of all, which was at Juventus. But he's 34 years of age, and he's regularly kind of up there at the top of the scoring charts. And he's really taken on the role of kind of team leader. He deals with all the kind of legal issues as well. He deals with the potential buyers and backers. He goes to meet them. He's become a kind of representative. The other fellow worth mentioning is Alberto Malassani, who was seen as the hot young thing of Italian management back at Parma and Salernitana back in the 90s. Former photocopier salesman. Who kind of drifted into to management at Chievo, curious enough, and has been all over the place. Greece, etc., has been a bit of a washout everywhere. And but now seems to be coming good, perhaps, as you say, on the back of this this blitz spirit that's been evoked. Interesting. OK, that's it for part two. Sighs of relief all round as a musical jingle introduces our look at the FA Cup.
Football Weekly Extra on Guardian.co.uk.
It's the FA Cup again this weekend. It's the fourth round. Some interesting clashes, hey? And Sheffield Wednesday Hereford. Which, Tom, you're going to tell me why that's really interesting.
That leapt out at me from the fixture list.
Did it?
Because Hereford are actually a really exciting team.
Are they?
Since they had a change of manager a while ago, they've hit some form. They're fourth bottom in the league. But I think they've won the last three games. They've been scoring loads of goals. And Sheffield Wednesday at the moment are terrible. I think they've lost by four twice in the last three games.
Really?
So I think that could be a shock there.
All right. Stevenage Reading. Paul, you were saying the Stevenage fan who belted their player is in court.
Well, yeah, he was in court this week, and I didn't follow it all the way to the end, but I did see that he provided some explanation for actions.
I think he's yet to be sentenced, but that's likely to happen after this pod is recorded.
Right.
But that the judge has suggested that a custodial sentence is inevitable. He has some previous.
So has his girlfriend, is that right?
Well, apparently so.
He was revenging his girlfriend?
Apparently the player didn't treat her right.
Oh, right.
That's the allegation. Mm. But
it's a blow against sexism.
I was going to say, sticking up for women's rights. Yeah. It's that kind of week.
So you can't win, can you? Really?
Torquay are playing Crawley Town. Are they the only non-league team left in it, Crawley Town?
Yeah, I think so.
Yep, okay. You were telling me about, who's it, Sergio Torres?
Sergio Torres, formerly of Wickham,
All right.
Argentinian striker.
Mm-hmm. He plays for Crawley.
Yeah, and he had to work in boots, I think, to support himself for a while.
Don't all footballers work in boots?
Very good.
Right, okay.
And also in a brick factory. His dad owns a brick factory in Argentina. So he can't be that poor if your dad owns a brick factory.
So is he good in the wall? There's more to him. Yeah. Okay.
They have a lot of money, Crawley, and a good squad. And they, I doubt that they'll be looking. I'm sure that they will be looking for progress here. I think that Torquay might be quaking in their boots,
right.
Though probably not the same brunch of boots.
Right, yeah. Torres. And of course, Torquay will be without their manager, Paul Buckle, who got sent off the weekend.
Yeah.
Southampton, that's also interesting. A big clash from yesteryear. They're hosting Man United there at St Mary's. How about that one then?
Well, and with Manchester United apparently joining the race for Southampton's teenage prodigy with a long name.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, it's like the televised. Leeds have been on television in the last couple of years playing big clubs in the manner that, in what used to be genuinely big clashes and are now kind of reminiscent to big clashes. But as it happened, Leeds played really well in both of them. Anyway, so Southampton Manchester United is obviously a fallen quite big club against a genuinely big club. Southampton are coming good and they've now got someone who seems to be a genuinely talented manager. And I think the future looks rosy for them, irrespective of, you would surely expect them to lose this match.
But really? But it's around this sort of point that the United often starts to crash out of the cup.
Well, of course, they lost to Leeds in the third round last year, but they are a strong team and they don't know when they're beaten.
Right.
As
we've
seen.
Clearly true. Also being televised this weekend is that Man City visit to Notts County. Notts County, now managed by, of course, the governor. And yes. They put out Sunderland, didn't they, Notts County, in the third round?
And he was linked in the press today, the governor, to a possible move to Sheffield Wednesday. If Sheffield Wednesday's current downturn continues, Alan Irvine's might well be in trouble. And the governor, who only took over at Notts County at the end of October, might be getting a rapid promotion.
Right. It's a tangled web, isn't it, football?
Yeah.
Yeah, very much so. West Ham, shagged out by their long car journey to Birmingham and back, crucially, will be hosting Nottingham Forest on Sunday.
Forest beat Derby in the East Midlands Derby last week, so they're quite buoyant at the moment. And effectively, West Ham's any hope West Ham have for the season could be over in in a matter of days.
I think Forest may have won their last six. They're more than quite buoyant. They're pretty emphatically buyant.
Oh.
And they're emphatically buoyant.
And I think that West Ham are, I mean, if you're picking one Premier League club that are ripe for defeat this weekend, it would be them. They may be fatigued by their exertions last night, and Forest will be right up for it.
Right. Forest will be quite literally on fire.
Well, they have been on fire the last few weeks.
All right. Fulham will be taking on Tottenham. Aston Villa will be hosting Blackburn and Paul Doyle. Because you're going to Villa Park, aren't you?
Yeah, I am. Yeah. I'm quite looking forward to it too.
Are
for
you?
A number
now
of
that
reasons.
You know who they're playing.
I don't know. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing Jean Macoun, who may or may not be selected, but he's just joined from Lyon, mm-hmm. where I don't think any Lyon fans were sad to see him go. He was a bit of a flop after being brought in there by Club Puel for a lot of money. But before Lyon, at Lille, he was a really good holding midfielder who could also drive forward, which... So he could lend a bit of protection, in theory, to Villa's defence while simultaneously contributing goals from midfield.
A sort of Essien-like figure, yeah?
Well, yeah, he's not in that class,
right.
but similar-ish. However, he was out of his depth at Lyon. It remains to be seen whether Villa is more in keeping with his abilities. And Blackburn, of course, are also they're a team in transition as well, and Steve Keane is trying to change the way they play football. He's trying to keep it on the ground a bit more. He's even gone so far as to try to make Morten Gams Pedersen this deep-lying Andrea Pirlo-style playmaker, with mixed results, I have to say. I'm not convinced that can succeed in the long term, but at least they're noble intentions, and results have been pretty good so far.
All right, then. Watford-Brighton, that's a game that's got your eye, isn't it, Simon?
Well, I think that Watford have been a lot of fun this season. Right. Very little was expected of them pre-season. But obviously expectations have been massively exceeded. Scoring a lot of goals, conceding a fair few. Brighton seeking promotion from League One. I think that if you cast aside the size of clubs, and I think that this promises to be one of the more exciting games to actually watch.
Really?
This weekend.
All right. And what about Everton Chelsea then to finish off?
Well, I guess
they're both doing well. They're both reasonably buoyant on the buoyancy chart. I put them at reasonably.
Reasonably buoyant.
Yeah.
It's the derby of clubs recently spurned by Stephen Pienaar.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
So I don't know if that will add any kind of needle to proceedings.
Yeah. Everton, of course, the club that got shot at the Pienaar player. If that's one too far, isn't it? Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. But they're doing well. They're unbeaten in the last three or four games. Chelsea, of course, coming off that big win midweek. They both had big wins in the last round of the Cup. Chelsea, of course, against Ipswich, and Everton put 5 past Scunthorpe, Paul Doyle.
Yeah, Everton's big problem still remains that they don't score enough. They don't convert enough of their
chances.
They did against Scunthorpe, in fairness. But Chelsea will be quite a different proposition, not least because I think it's worth mentioning that Petr Cech, who we sort of wrote off and suggested this time last season that he hadn't been the same since his injury, I think he's back to his best. I think he's been really good this season.
Certainly has. Very good. Well, that is what awaits this weekend in the Cup. Monday, Football Weekly will have a full roundup of all of that and loads more stuff besides. So do make sure you join us then. Many thanks in the meantime to guest producer Pascal, to Paul Doyle, to Tom Lutz and Simon Burnton. And we'll be back on Monday. So have a super weekend and we'll speak to you then. Bye-bye.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.